Okay, for part two, we are going to cover the accessory digestive organs. Starting with the teeth, you might want to open up to page 874. Of course, you talk about chewing food. Scientists are never satisfied with just a word like chewing. So the actual process of chewing has a science word. It's called mastication. And that's your first bullet under teeth. As you all know, you have two sets of teeth. You have your baby teeth. Sometimes they're called milk teeth, which I've never fully understood. In science, though, we call those deciduous teeth, and you have 20 of them. And deciduous is a word you might hear in botany when you talk about trees that drop their leaves in the fall. They're called deciduous trees. Well, the deciduous teeth get dropped, and then you get your permanent teeth, and there are 32 of those. They are covered by the white part that everybody's familiar with called enamel, and it is the hardest substance in the body, yet somewhat brittle. It's just kind of a weird thing. Hardness is a measure of how hard it is to scratch the surface of it. If you take geology someday, there's a thing called Mohs scale of hardness, and the hardest substance known is diamond, and they have rankings of all these things. So, although it's the hardest, teeth are somewhat brittle. And brittle is a strange word. What it means is that if you have a sideways force against them, a torquing force, they will break. They don't have good flexibility. They have hardness, but not flexibility. If you ever look at knife blades, it's kind of a give or take. Do you want a hard, sharp edge, or do you want a durable blade that won't snap? Anyways, your teeth can definitely be broken. I've had a number of friends over the years that have busted teeth in half by hitting them with some hard object by accident. They're a weird thing. Anywho, one of the reasons I know a lot of students go on to dental hygiene or dentistry. One of the reasons you want to floss and do all those things is the plaque that builds up on your teeth. It actually makes a hard layer and it secretes chemicals, the bacteria that are making the plaque, that dissolve the enamel and eventually those become cavities. But by flossing and getting your teeth cleaned every 6 months, you chip away that plaque so you don't have the opportunity for those rascals to make cavities. Salivary glands are our next topic, and you might want to go to page 872. And as you eat food, there's a lot of saliva that gets released. The first bullet says three pairs. The first ones are the parotid glands, and those are the largest ones. And they're the ones that are affected by mumps. Now, all you kids are born in a great time where you had the MMR shot, vaccination shot, which stands for measles, mumps, and rubella. When I was a kid, we didn't have it. And I got mumps, and most of my friends got mumps, and it was a nightmare. Your neck swells up. You can't even turn your head a half inch without just searing pain in your neck. My brother got measles, and that wasn't a good thing. He had the highest fever I've ever seen or heard of in my life. And I don't think I knew anybody that got rubella, but either way, you got the MMR shot probably. And so you never had to put up with those things. Number two are the submandibular, and as the word implies, it means under the jaw. And number three is sublingual, and as that name implies, it means under the tongue. So you have these three pairs of salivary glands, and they release saliva, obviously. Saliva is made of mucus and serous fluid, so it's not water, it's a little oilier than that. It also has a substance called salivary amylase. And whenever you hear ASE, that means it's an enzyme. And it is an enzyme that starts the digestion of starch. It's the only thing that you're going to digest in your mouth itself. If you take a saltine cracker and put it on your tongue and leave it there for a while, you will digest it in your mouth. The other thing you find in saliva are lysozymes and antibodies that inhibit bacteria. Now, there's no way you're going to get rid of them all, but they do keep it in check somewhat. The next structure of the accessory digestive organs we're going to talk about is the pancreas. Now, we've already talked about this one before. When we talked about the endocrine system, we talked about the two hormones secreted by the pancreas to balance your blood sugar. One of them brings it up, one brings it down. But now we're going to talk about digestive enzymes that it makes. For the first bullet, it makes enzymes that break down all categories of digestible foods. So anything that you eat that we are able to digest, enzymes by the pancreas are secreted for that reason. It also produces an alkaline solution. That means like a base. Now think about it for a sec. You've got your stomach, which is filled with this vat of wicked acid, which is fine. It's got a thick mucus layer to protect itself. But when it goes into your small intestine, you need to neutralize that acid. So the opposite of acid is a base. You have an alkaline solution from the pancreas that neutralizes that so that you don't burn up your intestines with the acid. As I mentioned for the third bullet, it makes the hormones insulin and glucagon as well. They have nothing to do with digestion, but the same structure does all of those jobs. The picture of the pancreas is on page 888, and it shows you some of the plumbing and some of the pipes that run through it and where it enters at the duodenal papilla. Next, we move on to the liver and gallbladder. Now, the liver, to me, is the greatest organ in the body. It does a bigger variety of functions than any other body part, without question. Your brain is just a dopey electrical thing with some hormones that it secretes. I'm kidding, but I mean, it does its bit. The heart is just a pump, but the liver can do everything. It has so many different jobs. You could study it for years by itself. Go to the picture on page 890 of the book to see it. It is the largest gland in the body. It's the first bullet. It has four lobes. Those are those deep folds that we talk about, like the lungs had three and two lobes. This has four lobes. It hangs from the diaphragm by a ligament called the falciform ligament to keep it in place. So the diaphragm is that dome of muscle that goes up and down as you breathe, while the liver is suspended by that diaphragm, by that ligament. It has, as I said for the next bullet in the intro, it has an unlimited number of functions. So many metabolic and regulatory roles. Next bullet, it produces bile. And when you hear bile, that gets dropped into your small intestine when food passes by in the duodenum. And bile is not an enzyme, but it emulsifies fats. And what that means is it gets between the fats. Like fats cling to each other and form these big droplets. You know this from washing dishes. If you just try to wash dishes with water, it doesn't get anywhere. But if you put some soap in there, it gets between the fat molecules and breaks it up so it can be washed away. Well, that's what bile does. And then the next bullet, the gallbladder is a storage tank for bile. And so what happens is when you don't have food there, the gallbladder fills up with bile during the day. And then when a meal passes through that duodenum, it'll squirt that bile onto the food to help emulsify fats. Now, so a lot of people get their gallbladder removed because they get stones in there. They get gallstones, which are crystallized cholesterols. And when you get rid of your gallbladder, you're getting rid of that storage tank. And what it means is, as you make bile during the day, you just trickle it into your small intestine all the time, whether there's food there or not. So people that don't have a gallbladder, when they have a fatty meal, like, oh, say a double-double with grilled onions, when that thing hits your small intestine, you don't have enough bile to emulsify it. So they get some digestive issues. They're going to have that food's going to kind of race through your system. On the next page of notes, we're going to get into the functions of the digestive system. Two main jobs are, first, digestion, and number two, absorption. So you've got to break it down is what digestion is. And then absorption is going to be pulling those particles across the membrane into your bloodstream, and now you've absorbed them, and now those particles are part of you now. So digestive events. First is the sciencey word ingestion, and that means the eating of food. Put it in your mouth to chew it up. Propulsion, in this part of the notes, refers to swallowing and peristalsis and segmentation. Peristalsis is going to be the pushing of food down the pipe. I always compare this to like when you're almost out of toothpaste and then you go to the bottom of the toothpaste tube and you kind of squeeze it forward. That's like peristalsis, sort of. Segmentation is when you're kind of like, if you've ever kneaded bread before, if you know what that word means, you kind of put the yeast in the dough and you fold it back and forth, you kind of work it. That's what segmentation is like in your intestine. You kind of push the food back and forth so it gets more exposure to the enzymes. Mechanical digestion is increases surface area. That's the bottom line there. Remember, the more of your food that's exposed to digestive enzymes, the quicker and easier it's going to be to break that food down. Second bullet, chewing with teeth is an obvious example of that. Churning in the stomach with the rugi is going to help break it down further, and segmentation in the small intestine. For chemical digestion, this is enzymes that break down food to molecule size. Now, you can chew on it for a day if you want, but you have not broken it down to molecules yet. So it takes chemicals to do this. These enzymes will break it down to molecule size. And then the other thing worth knowing, some parts of our food that we consume, we don't have enzymes for. That's going to be our fiber or roughage or whatever you want to call it. And that's a really important part of our diet that sadly is lacking in the typical American diet. We like white bread and white rice and all these things. Well, the reason it's white is you've gotten rid of the fiber. So you want to put fiber into your food as much as possible. And if you want to just hedge your bet, take fiber pills. You know, try to eat your best meals, but if you're worried that you're not, if you take fiber pills like Citracell or Metamucil or those, that adds fiber to your diet and that helps move your food along. Next is absorption, which is transporting food particles from the lumen of your intestines to the bloodstream or lymphatics. There's some parts of food, as we'll see later, get absorbed into the lymphatic system, believe it or not. Second bullet for absorption is food enters mucosal cells by either active or passive transport. We'll talk about which ones go in which way. But active transport means you have to spend energy to bring them in. Passive transport means they just diffuse in on their own. And then the final word of this digestive events is defecation. That's a fancy word for going poop. Your one and only bullets. We wrote the elimination of indigestible food products from the GI tract through the anus. There's also a great deal of bacteria makes the bulk of feces. On the next page of notes, we have the review of chemical breakdown of food. And honestly, if you were in Anat and Phys 201, 202, you would spend a great deal of time on this, but we're going to kind of just summarize it. But we're going to talk about the major parts of groups, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats or lipids. And then where the enzymes come from and where the food actually gets absorbed. So for carbs, you can read that your mouth has one single enzyme for breaking down carbs. The pancreas makes three. And the brush border of the small intestine itself makes five different enzymes. And once you have those carbs broken down to single sugars, they are absorbed by capillaries, blood capillaries in the villi by active transport. For proteins, we make one enzyme in the stomach. We talked about pepsin. The pancreas makes three, and the brush border, which is again the wall of the small intestine, makes three by itself. Those also get absorbed by capillary blood in the villi by active transport. And then for fats and lipids, only one enzyme we have for this, and that's from the pancreas. And fatty acids from this breaking down get absorbed by lacteals, which are part of the lymphatic system, in each villi by passive transport. The next topic is the digestive activities by location. So what's taking place in each part of the alimentary canal as far as digestion goes. The mouth only has one thing. It breaks down starch. That's the only activity. It's our only bullet. For pharynx and esophagus, there are no digestive process, just transport. You're not absorbing anything by your throat or the esophagus. In the stomach, first bullet, you have digestion of protein begins here. Takes about 4 hours to clear the stomach of its food, about 6 hours if it's a real fatty meal. So think about that in terms of, like, if you're gonna want to go to exercise or something, you don't want a big old meal sitting in your stomach. He's like, oh, I've waited 2 hours, but you still have that whole meal in your stomach. And if it's a big meal, it's going to interfere with how much air you can exchange, with the diaphragm going up and down if your stomach is full. So 4 to 6 hours that food is going to spend in your stomach. Stomach acid, which we've talked about a little bit, is so strong that it can actually burn a hole in the stomach itself, and that's an ulcer. And there's a variety of reasons for that that we're going to actually research at the end of this chapter. Normally, though, the stomach walls are protected by a thick layer of mucus. Once the food leaves the stomach, it goes into the small intestine. And now you're going to look at another 3 to 6 hour trip to break down the food further and absorb it. So 3 to 6 hours in the small intestine. So if you were 4 to 6 in the stomach and 3 to 6 in the small intestine, you're anywhere from 7 to 12 hours from the time you eat a meal. That's going to be how long it's in your stomach and small intestine, pulling whatever you're going to get out of it. Second bullet, pancreatic juice and liver bile are both ducted into the small intestine. And again, that's in the first few inches of the small intestine. Those juices are put in. The release of pancreatic juice is stimulated by the vagus nerve. And we've brought up the vagus nerve a number of times. It's one of its many jobs. When it detects that food is pushed in the small intestine, it's going to tell the pancreas to secrete its juices, along with the effects of local hormones in the intestine itself. The breakdown of all three groups is going to take place within the small intestine. You're not going to get any more breaking down by our digestive processes. And the last bullet for small intestine, the absorption of food and water happens throughout the small intestine. Last structure we're going to cover, large intestine. Your food is going to be in there anywhere from 12 to 24 hours. There's a great many factors that describe how quick the food moves through. It's a weird topic, but if you have a poop sitting there, it's not a single meal that you've consumed. Food moves through your system at different speeds. Fibers and things like that move much quicker. Anybody that's had a bunch of corn niblets knows the next day early on that those corns have moved through you all the way, which is kind of a disgusting topic, but compared to fats, which move through much slower, they don't all have the same speed. Second bullet from the large intestine is that resident bacteria, which you've picked up along your life. Resident bacteria help take more nutrients, some vitamins, out of your food. We get kind of freaked out about germs and all that, but the truth is you have to have bacteria in your colon, to live a perfectly healthy life. That you can get disruptions, but there's some bacteria that you have to have in there to help get the nutrients out. Another bullet of interest is you make about 500 milliliters of flatus per day. That's gas. So that's as bacteria break down foods. There's gases released. For the most part, it's carbon dioxide, but the gas that's produced sometimes is stinky. There's a dimethyl sulfide gets released in the breakdown of certain foods, and so some of that gas doesn't have much odor, but others is terrible, as we've seen. Those pockets within this large intestine, they were called haustra. So haustral contractions move the food through the large intestine. Now they're not constant. The food will sit in each of these pockets for a while before it gets pushed to the next one. If you look at the large intestine drawing in the book, You can see these pockets. The contractions happen about every 30 minutes, and they last for about a minute each. So the food kind of ratchets its way through the large intestine. And again, along the way, you're absorbing water from that food. If for some reason that food goes through really, really fast, then you're going to have diarrhea because you haven't removed the water yet. And that's a lot of fun, of course. For the last part of your notes packet, there are a list of diseases or conditions relating to this digestive system that I want you to research. They're short. A couple sentences will do fine for each one. But you can either use the book, or if you want to go to WebMD or the Mayo Clinic and just get general descriptions of each. But many of these, they're more common than you might realize. So as you start to look them up, you may recognize the symptoms, but make descriptions of those before you submit the notes to me. Again, I want to remind you that for 4 days during the next week, I want you to write down everything you consume, everything you eat, everything you drink on a piece of paper. And then I want you to break down how many proteins, carbs, and lipids you're getting each day, if you're getting enough fiber. All of the foods that you write down, they're easy to Google and find out their nutrient value. So I want you to see how you're doing, if you're eating relatively healthy foods or maybe just tasty but not so healthy foods for 4 days. And then that's going to suffice for the lab grade for this section. It might be a good education tool for you. I know when we think maybe we're eating healthy, but when you actually write it down, you're like, oh boy. So that will be the lab portion. These notes highlighted with commentary will be the regular grade. And we only have 2 units left after this, guys. Take care.